health is something that's been getting a lot of buzz recently, ever since the pandemic. Everyone is prioritizing it, demanding that others respect it, and many are using it as an excuse to just take a break from reality. But there is a difference between wanting a mental health break and actually suffering from depression. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be talking about mental health and unraveling the intricacies of depression and anxiety and the staggering costs that they impose on our society. Depression is one of the most common forms of mental illness in the world, with about 280 million people worldwide suffering from it. The National Institute of Mental Health estimates that 21 million U.S. adults had at least one major depressive episode, which represents around 8.3% of the U.S. adult population. Symptoms include a loss of interest in things that used to be enjoyable, loss of energy, feelings of worthlessness and guilt, difficulty concentrating, anxiety, and thoughts of death or suicide. Depression is more common among women than men, with the most common age between 18 to 25 years old. Depression is also common among youth, with up to 29% of teenage girls and almost 12% of teenage boys experiencing a major depressive episode in 2021. The younger generation are struggling with mental health as the COVID pandemic disrupted pivotal periods of growth for young adults, which have left them more susceptible to the drivers of depression. Young adults reported higher rates of depression than any other age group and the greatest increase in recent years. Depression and anxiety are on the rise, and there are multifaceted reasons behind this increase. You have societal pressures, economic uncertainties, and the fast-paced nature of modern life creating the perfect storm. The constant connectivity and information overload also plays a significant role in amplifying stressors. Technology introduces new challenges as constant exposures to curated versions of others' lives on social media can foster feelings of inadequacy. So finding a healthy balance in our digital lives is crucial. The economic toll of depression is staggering. From lost productivity in the workplace to increased healthcare expenditures, the financial impact is substantial. We often underestimate the ripple effects on families, communities, and the overall economy when mental health is neglected. Approximately 6 to 7% of full-time U.S. workers experienced major depression disorder, or MDD, within the past year. The total economic burden of U.S. adults with MDD was estimated at $210 billion. Workplace costs accounted for the largest portion of the growing economic burden, as MDD leads to absenteeism and presenteeism, where there is reduced productivity while at work. This results in reduced educational attainment, lower earnings potential, higher unemployment, and increased work disability. 45% of the total costs are due to direct medical costs such as therapy, outpatient and inpatient medical services, pharmaceuticals, etc. The economic ripples of MDD are extensive. For every dollar spent on treating depression, an additional $4.70 is spent on direct and indirect costs of related illnesses, and another $1.90 is spent on reduced workplace productivity. And now today, we're joined by author and positive psychology expert Robert Mack to discuss some more. So, how has the prevalence of depression evolved over the years, and are there identifiable patterns or factors contributing to these changes?
Yeah, there were probably an additional 53.2 million cases of anxiety, an additional 76.2 million cases of major depressive disorder in 2020, according to the Global Burden of Disease study. Lots of socioeconomic, cultural, and other factors are at play there. I would say that women and children are and have been consistently hit the hardest. We mostly think that something outside of us or someone outside of us can or will make us happy. Lots of things, lots of people can encourage us to be happy. But if we look closely at the science and we look closely at our lives, we can very quickly notice that people who seem to have everything are often deeply depressed, at least unhappy, and often suicidal.
And what are the societal costs associated with untreated or poorly managed depression?
So untreated or poorly managed depression leads to higher suicide rates, higher healthcare spending, lower quality of life, lower work productivity, and so much more.
Can you discuss some of the broader economic implications of depression, including its impact on workforce productivity and healthcare expenditures?
Depression has significant economic implications, including direct costs like therapy and medication for individuals and indirect costs like lost productivity and disability claims for organizations. We tend to think about depression like an individual and on a case-by-case basis, and that it only affects individuals and or their families or loved ones. But the truth is it affects all of us, whether we're diagnosed with clinical depression or anxiety or not. You're right, it has economic cost and other costs that transcend the individual, transcend the family, and actually affect us as a country and as a world. So yeah, without question, depression goes beyond what any particular individual experiences, and it touches all of us in one way or another.
And are there notable variations in the prevalence of depression across different countries or regions?
I think here in the United States, we do tend to consistently rank low with respect to happiness and high with respect to depression and anxiety, particularly for developed countries and or developed countries. That being said, the prevalence of depression rates varies across different demographics. So for instance, during the pandemic, women and children were disproportionately affected with respect to depression and anxiety. There are lots of factors that contribute to sort of depression on one hand and happiness on the other. I think consistently, lots of countries in Europe and South America and even Canada rank higher in happiness than the United States for lots of reasons. Some of those factors have to do with how sort of monolithic the culture is, surprisingly enough. It also has to do with politics. So in lots of countries, say Denmark, for example, or maybe Switzerland or even Sweden, when folks are taxed at pretty much the same rate, so let's say you're taxed at equivalent, maybe approximately 50%, everybody makes pretty much the same amount of money or close enough to the same amount of money. And so then people choose careers as a result of that, because they love or are very passionate about doing X, Y, and Z, as opposed to choosing careers for purely monetary or materialistic reasons. And so that means that later in life, they're generally happier for the professions they've chose. Also, sometimes there are healthcare benefits and other sort of social welfare programs that are put in place for people, so they don't have to worry about things like losing their job as much, like healthcare. Those things matter a great deal to people. So anywhere that people feel a lot, a big, large sense of trust, where they feel connected and not so lonely, where they feel like they're seen and understood and they're taken care of by their government, those places are going to report higher levels of happiness and lower levels of depression, relatively speaking, with countries that don't do those things so well or focus on other programs or other political, initiatives.
How do cultural and societal factors influence the understanding and reporting of depression in various parts of the world?
Untreated or poorly managed depression leads to higher suicide rates, higher healthcare spending, lower quality of life, lower work productivity, and more. And how often, consistently, and sort of freely people on one hand report symptoms of depression or anxiety depends to a large extent on how accepted that is and even celebrated it is within this particular country. So if there's a lot of stigma around depression and anxiety, like there is in lots of parts of the world, or within particular socioeconomic status levels, or within particular races or ethnicities, or even gender related differences, can cause differences in reporting. And it can also cause differences in diagnosis as well.
Thank you so much, Robert, but please stick around. Author Robert Mack will stay with us right here after the break. And as we head into the break, we will explore if a nation's culture can deeply influence mental health and access to treatment or not. Stay tuned for more.
Здесь наш храм.
Раньше ходил здесь в рясе, теперь вот в камуфляже.
Начал работать миномет, и в 2 метрах упала от меня мина. Ни одного осколка не зацепил. Охранял, я не знаю, какие-то высшие силы, наверное.
Это война. Передо мной враг, который, если будет двигаться в мою сторону, я буду убивать.
Как раз вера на войне для того и нужна, чтобы остаться человеком.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Position, I was suggesting we bomb Belgrade. I was suggesting that we send American pilots in and blow up all the bridges on the Drina.
Vranje je bilo zasipano bombama danima, ali ne ovakvim vrstom municije. Oni su taj relej rušili umesto klasičnim naoružanjem, rušili su uranijumom.
Koja opasnost nismo znali tad.
Mi nismo ni znali da je gađano s osiromašenom uranijum.
It may be, you know, a lot less radioactive than something that's active uranium, but still it's radioactive and it has toxins in it that can kill you.
NATO i Amerikanci su izvršili genocid i ekocid nad ovim gradom i nad ovim ljudima ovde.
I was suggesting we bomb Belgrade.
To je bilo haos, strahota i užas.
While depression is a growing problem worldwide, Ukraine tops the list as the country with the highest rate of depression at 6.3%. This is followed by the US, Australia, and Estonia at 5.9%, Brazil at 5.8%, and Greece at 5.7%. A nation's culture can have a significant impact on both the mental health aspect of its population and the availability of treatment services. For example, while depression is relatively uncommon in Japan, suicide rates are high for children and teens ages 10 to 19. This is most likely due to the pressure to do well in school and work. In many Asian cultures, such as China, Japan, or Korea, there's a concept of face, which refers to one's reputation. Mental health challenges are viewed as an individual problem or weakness, and talking openly about sadness, disappointment, or depression is rarely encouraged. In some African cultures, such as Nigeria, Ghana, or Kenya, there is a belief in witchcraft, which refers to the use of supernatural powers to cause harm or misfortune. People with mental health disorders may be accused of being witches or possessed by evil spirits and may face ostracism from their family or community. In India, there's still a stigma and lack of mental health awareness. Mental illness is not considered a disease, but a state of mind. This leads to a lack of trained professionals to service those who need it. But luckily, in many countries, the stigma surrounding mental illnesses is gradually decreasing. This enables a more open discussion of mental illness and makes people more likely to seek help when they need it. Since the start of COVID-19, more companies are enhancing their mental health benefit offerings for employees. A survey of 256 companies found that since COVID, 53% of employers have begun providing specific emotional and mental health programs for their workforce. These programs include free access to various health and wellness applications, video sessions with mental health counselors, and stipends for psychological or physical health-related services. Meanwhile, countries with the lowest rates of depression include the Solomon Islands at 2.9%, Papua New Guinea at 3%, Micronesia at 3.1%, and Nepal at 3.2%. And now we're joined again by author and positive psychology expert Robert Mack to discuss some more. Now, Robert, from an economic standpoint, what are the direct and indirect costs associated with depression for individuals?
Individuals face both direct and indirect costs associated with depression. The direct costs, of course, are the cost of healthcare itself, treatment, medication, therapy, things of that nature. The indirect costs can include things like higher medical expenses overall, loss of income, and potential long-term disability. When you're depressed, you often lack the motivation to show up to work. You need to take days off, but also when you do show up, you tend to be disengaged.
And how does depression contribute to healthcare expenses, workplace absenteeism, and disability claims?
Anything that would affect your motivation or your ability to sort of maintain a consistently healthy mood is going to also affect people around you. It's going to affect your ability to be productive, to think creatively, to show up and be efficient and effective at what you do at your job.
What are the financial considerations for individuals seeking treatment for depression, including therapy and medication costs?
Speaking of steep, financial costs for individuals include out-of-pocket expenses for therapy, medications, and other types of treatment.
Are there disparities in access to mental health treatments based on socioeconomic factors?
There are significant disparities in access to mental health treatment. Those are based mostly on socioeconomic factors, but also on other things like gender and race and ethnicity and culture as well. People with lower incomes and people without health insurance face probably the greatest challenges with respect to both getting diagnosed with and getting treatment for depression, anxiety, and other mental health disorders. Lots of those folks who don't have access to health insurance and have lower incomes for lots of reasons that have directly to do with not having access to health insurance and not having enough money to pay the bills. Maybe they are living below a level of subsistence, which means they can't pay for basic necessities, are going to be under more stress. They might feel more anxiety. As a result of that, they're going to feel more helpless and more hopeless. And so not only are they more subject often to experiencing symptoms of depression and anxiety, but they also have less access to doing anything about it, less ability to do anything about it. And that can actually increase or make worse the depression and anxiety itself.
And are there studies or rankings that identify countries with higher rates of depression? And what factors might contribute to these variations?
So studies like the Global Burden of Disease study provide insights into countries with higher rates of depression, really indicating the pandemic's impact on increasing the prevalence of anxiety and depression. But there are, of course, lots of factors that it also speaks to, including some of the things we mentioned before, which is sort of socioeconomic status, politics, culture, race, ethnicity, gender even, and even age. Those things can all play a critical role in both getting diagnosed with depression, anxiety, or another mental disorder, and also getting treatment for it.
It seems like anxiety and depression are quite prevalent in our society today, but where's the threshold for someone to be clinically diagnosed as depressed or suffering from high anxiety and just someone who doesn't cope well with stress and pressure?
A clinical diagnosis for depression is significantly different than the normal, healthy, but often uncomfortable responses that we have to stress and adversity and the challenges of our everyday life. When you find it extraordinarily difficult and to respond to everyday life in a way that is other than healthy. In other words, you're showing up in response to the adversity or challenge in your life in a way that makes it difficult to get through the day. When you find it difficult to find interest in things that you normally have interest in, when you find it difficult to sleep, and so you're sleeping too little or you're sleeping too much, you just want to always be asleep. Things of this nature are some of the criteria that a mental health professional will use to diagnose clinical depression. Clinical depression is really something that goes way beyond sadness. It goes way beyond your everyday stress. And it's a clinical diagnosis that you receive only from a mental health professional. And they have a checklist of criteria that they, sort of vet you for to determine whether or not what your experience is sort of normal and healthy or requires a deeper or greater form of treatment, therapy, or medication. So yes, clinical depression is significantly different from the normal responses that we all sort of have, for when we're experiencing other challenges or adversity in our life. We've got business as usual psychology on one hand, and that's what we use to diagnose clinical disorders, depression, anxiety. We've got positive psychology on the other hand that mostly focuses on mental health, but together they create a science that lets us see clearly what leads to happiness, what causes happiness, and what gets in the way of it, and what leads to depression, anxiety instead. And so there's no question about it that the way we live here in the United States presents unique challenges to feeling consistently at peace, to feeling satisfied with your life, to feeling happy. and can sometimes make it a lot easier to feel depressed and anxiety and stressed out and a whole number of other things. The speed at which we live is one of those factors. The diversity is actually a huge benefit and really fantastic in lots of ways. It can also be a challenge, and not just diversity in terms of race and gender and religion and those kinds of things, but also in terms of diversity of thought, right? Lots of diversity of thought in the United States that can present a challenge for folks who are unable to maintain or hold cognitive dissonance, which is just the stress and anxiety of seeing or experiencing contradictory ways of living often. That's another example. I think also here in the States, we have a very individualistic culture. Some cultures are individualistic, some are more sort of like collectivist. And what that essentially means is that we have this idea of the self-made person, which can be really inspiring on one hand, but it also can lead people to feeling very lonely on the other. And they can also blame themselves when they're not successful or they're not thriving. And then when you add into that a lot of the technological factors like social media and being so available online, you know, we can see other people's lives. You know, decades ago, you could only really understand or see into people's lives if they told you about them or was your next door neighbor. These days, you can literally get a glimpse into millions of people's lives across the entire world. And that can set you up for unhappiness, even depression, anxiety, as you begin to compare and contrast your life and your day with millions of people's lives across the world. So we've got a lot of factors that can play in to the challenges that we face here in the United States specifically, but across the world as well.
Thank you so much, Robert, for all your time today. And while depression is on the rise, the bright spot in all of this is the pharmaceutical industry. Yes, for every problem, there seems to be a little pill that can make it all better. The antidepressant market is experiencing substantial growth, reaching an estimated value of $21.8 billion by 2030. A surge in prevalence and an increasing awareness towards mental health disorders such as depression and anxiety are pivotal factors driving this expansion. The number of antidepressants prescribed per year more than tripled over the past two decades, from 18.4 million in 1998 to 70.9 million in 2018. 57% of Gen Zers with mental health conditions are taking medications, and those who aren't on their parents' insurance pay around $528 a year out of pocket for medication. North America is identified as retaining the largest market share. So, the pharmaceutical industry ends up being the big winner, even though a reliance on pharmaceuticals to solve your problems isn't optimal. But unfortunately, people like the easy way out and would rather take a pill than to solve these problems in therapy. I'm Christy Eye. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.